Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Work Trends with Megan M. Biro. Whether you're here to network, learn, or share, we want you to have fun. During this live broadcast and Twitter chat, we'll discuss the future of work with smart and entertaining guests who value today's business and its impact on the world of work for the future. Stay tuned, because we start in 3, 2, 1.
Happy February 14th, everybody. Soon enough, that cheesy introduction is going away. I know you're going to miss it like I do. I don't want to say the date yet. I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but sometime in March, we are going to a new production platform. Excited to unfold that with you all. Thank you for being here today. Happy Valentine's Day, St. Valentine's Day, or Feast of the St. Valentine, whichever you prefer. I'm cool. One of my greatest, I love love. Like, I'm one of those people that is really fascinated by love. The greatest thing you'll ever learn is just how to love and be loved in return. Simple yet complex. One of my favorite quotes from the great musical comedy Moulin Rouge. Sometimes it's just, you just gotta love and allow that to happen. So that's today's message from MMB here. It's kind of funny. It's Valentine's Day, but we're also talking about conflict, which is kind of fun because, yes, love and conflict, they sometimes go hand in hand, actually. So welcome. Thank you for being here. Again, this is an interesting topic today and one that I think most of us can identify with. So stop and think for a moment about how you feel regarding conflict and even love, for that matter. Tweet along with us using Work Trends as the hashtag. What feelings, emotions, and physiological reactions are you experiencing right now? I bet many of you are thinking about how you avoid conflict, kind of as part of that equation, because you just don't know what to do with it. And frankly, some people I think would rather deal with a toxic situation versus take it head on, because a lot of people just don't like being in that state. Well, I've got a really awesome guest here today who is here to kind of come to the rescue and talk about how to kind of take this by the horns and address it head on with very thoughtful and usable information to help us understand conflict, how we manage it, how we take advantage of it. Pretty interesting, huh? So I'd like to introduce everybody to Dr. Nate. Dr. Nate, tell us a little bit more about you.
Well, hi, welcome. It's great to be here, Megan. And I think today is the perfect day for this topic. And I hope by the end of our time together, it will be really clear why conflict is so related to love and so related to great relationships. So I am glad to be with you today on Valentine's Day. I'm actually calling in from Kansas today. I live in a little small town of Newton, Kansas. Most people would say it's in the middle of nowhere. But I haven't always lived here. I grew up the son of missionary parents in Africa, in Zaire and Botswana. And so I got to experience a lot of conflict in some very interesting ways and a lot of injustice and watching how conflicts were handled in healthy and unhealthy ways. I call myself a recovering psychologist. I actually practiced psychology for 11 years, and I just couldn't do the hour after hour therapy thing, even though I loved working with people and I loved understanding why people tick. And so I am still practicing what I learned and using that in my work with teams and groups every day. I started Next Element, the company that I'm with now, in 2008, right during the recession. I left my stable psychology job and started a career as an entrepreneur in 2008, which was during the recession, like the worst time to try to get people to spend money. But it worked.
I can totally relate. Did something similar, and I think many people did, even around that time. Sometimes you just say, I can't do this anymore. I need something different. And you and I both talked in the green room about the fact that I once upon a time was to be a psychologist, and for that same reason did not go into the field. I just was like, I cannot sit on the couch and listen to people's problems every day, although I love people. There just wasn't enough there for me. So, you know, everyone has their own career, path, and it's so interesting to hear your story. Wow. just growing up in Africa, I mean, when we talk about conflict, you're right. There's just so many different layers to it. So tell us in your life, in your context, how you define conflict.
Great question. And it's pretty tough to talk about it unless we have a sense for what really is it. And our definition of conflict is pretty simple. We define it similar to what Ken Blanchard has said, which is conflict is simply the gap between what we want and what we're experiencing at any point in time. It could be as simple as I want to be at work at 8 o'clock and I'm sitting in line behind 8 people at Starbucks. Or it could be something very significant, like I want to feel aligned with my team and everybody's asking random questions as if they have no clue what's going on. And so whenever there's a gap between what we want and what we're experiencing, that's conflict.
That's kind of mind-blowing because I don't think many of us think of it that way. So when you put it in that context, wow, we could be experiencing conflict literally like on an hourly basis. Like,
There's conflict all the time everywhere, and that's, I think, the first important thing is to simply recognize that and demystify it as something good or bad. It just simply is this gap.
Okay, so clearly we may need to break this down a bit. Are there different types of conflict?
Definitely, and that's, I think, where most of our problems come in. There is different kinds of conflict, and it's to look at how there are the different types of conflict, we really have to look at this notion of struggling. Because when there's a gap between what we want and what we're experiencing, and it could be the typical conflict, like I want to be respected and my husband is speaking down to me in front of our friends. Whatever that is, it's about a struggle. We are struggling to close that gap and get what we want and reconcile those differences. The problem is, though, is that we can struggle to close that gap against each other in an adversarial way, and then that becomes drama because there's a winner and a loser, or can mm-hmm. struggle with somebody in conflict to create something, and that's what we call compassion. And so I think to really mm-hmm. understand the different types of conflict, we get down to how are we struggling? Is it creative alongside people, or is it adversarial where there's destructive potential?
That's so interesting. I never really thought of it in that way. Like, when we create drama, we're actually expanding away from each other or the collective. Kind of scary when you think and you look at the world the way it is right now, how much tension, how much unnecessary divide there is because of the way that people relate to each other on the conflict side.
Well, yeah, and it's expected and natural that there are going to be differences. We have different views on things. We have different philosophies and belief systems and different access to resources and different levels of affluence. That's just natural. But if we look at that difference and we decide to get adversarial about it, then the first thing we do is say, okay, it's us against them, and now I need to invest a lot of energy in being justified and so that I can say they're the ones with the problem. And as soon as we do that, we start to see all this stuff blow up around the world. And that's really what drama is seeking to be justified about our position when we're in an adversarial relationship.
So for people who are used to living this way, and I think many people are, like they're used to living in a state of conflict where there's a winner and there's a loser, and it's black and it's white, right?
Yeah.
How
yeah.
do you distinguish between these points of conflict?
I would say that if we are seeking to be justified, then we are definitely in drama, no matter what our position is. We may be invested in losing and proving, again, that, see, the whole world's out to get me. See, I always end up on the bottom. See, I'm such a loser. Or we may be invested in always winning so we can say, see, everyone else is stupid. Everyone's lazy. You can't trust anybody. See, they'll just take advantage of you if you let them. And so whatever position we take, we're now invested in perpetuating that position instead of resolving and using that conflict energy to create anything positive. So this notion of compassion and accountability we'll get to later is where we take all that energy and we start channeling it into a co-struggle to create something where justification really isn't part of the equation.
So I think many people, if not most, consider conflict to be a toxic and, you know, unredeeming situation. How did it get this kind of reputation? Where did this all come about?
I would say because of the casualties. And conflict in most people's lives has most often resulted in casualties, whether it's hurt feelings, whether it's strained relationships, whether it's relationships that are broken, maybe things get broken. You know, if I grew up in a home where whenever mom and dad disagreed, somebody got insulted or hurt or yelled at, then that was my association with conflict. When I turn on the news, all I see is conflict that destroys, and I see casualties everywhere. And so I think we have those associations because we've seen them everywhere. But I also think that it goes deeper than that, and it goes to kind of a core human thing. And I think humans at the core, we want to be justified. We want to be able to say, see, I was right about my hypothesis or my prediction or my stereotype. And I love that word, see, because anytime you ever hear anyone saying, see, it immediately means they have just got a jolt of self-justification to be able to prove they were right about themselves and about you. And so it's a natural
human
condition.
But where do you draw the line? Like, Nate, where do you, you know what I mean? Like, this sounds, I get where you're coming from, but it's like, isn't there some level of excitement, satisfaction, intellectual curiosity that happens from a healthy debate? Like, you see the other side of this? Like, where are we going with this?
Absolutely. I think healthy, it's kind of like we take the neurotransmitter dopamine, and we can get a jolt of dopamine through a runner's high, through exercising, through a really awesome sporting event, or we can get that very same dopamine high through a shot of cocaine. And so it's not that we don't need that energy. It's not that the energy isn't there and it's great. It's about how we get it and how we use it that can be hurtful or helpful.
Mm-hmm. What other myths are associated with conflict? Because I know there's just a lot of talk out there about it. We're literally talking daily, you know, and this is unfolding in front of us.
I think the number one, if you Google conflict, and you know how Google will like autofill words and phrases that tend to go with conflict, and if you Google conflict, the top words that get affiliated with it are management, mediation, reduction. So it's as if as soon as you see the word conflict, everybody says manage it, mediate it, reduce it, control it. And it's like, when did conflict get such a bad rap? Like it needs to be managed, mediated, reduced. And I think it's because we have this myth that conflict is bad, people always get hurt, and so therefore it should be controlled or mediated or somehow made to go away. Like we need to make less of it. And I think that's a huge myth because conflict is energy. And I think if we try to get rid of the conflict, we get rid of the energy, and then we're just left flat and bored and uncreative.
Well, given the reality, though, that many people hate conflict, many, not all, by the way. I know people who frankly thrive on conflict. But I would say, like, the majority, like a lot of people, don't like it. If we're speaking to these people who just hate it, what should they change? How and why and what should they change in terms of their position of how they view it and learn to embrace it?
That's a really good question, because if we can start changing our relationship with conflict, we can start doing different things with it. I think first of all is to recognize that drama, unhealthy conflict is incredibly unhealthy. It hurts us. And yesterday I was working with someone that said, well, I just avoid conflict. I just don't do it. And I said, and what do you do instead? And they said, she said, I don't sleep well. I'm preoccupied.
Right.
I fume. I gossip. So it's not like it's not affecting us. And so we're spending that energy one way or another, whether we're tackling the problem or whether we're stewing and gossiping and avoiding. So we have a real energy crisis here where conflict is an unbelievable source of energy, but we're misusing it. And there are just so many upsides if we can start thinking differently.
I think that is really fascinating, actually. When you think about how people are managing their realities and the amount of people that just go to that easy, like, I'm just going to stew, I'm going to vet, I'm going to make somebody feel bad on Twitter. The list goes on and on and on, right? It's like instead of actually dealing with it in a way that's healthy, productive, and helping themselves, right? Because we're only hurting ourselves when we don't fully express, when we're not being ourselves, right, and not feeling like we're accepted for who we are or what we stand for or respected. So that is just amazing to me. So just, there's just a huge gap, you know?
I'm with you. Well, deep down inside, I think we know when we're behaving nobly and healthy and when we're not. And when we don't behave in nice ways, then we somehow have to make it okay. And so now we get into all of these mind games to somehow make it okay that we talk to somebody like that, or we threw our best friend under the bus on Facebook. And that's where the justification comes in. Oh, I know.
It's exhausting. I mean, you consider conflict an energy source, and I'm starting to sort of be one with you on this the more I hear about it. Tell us more about this and where this energy is stored specifically in our psyche. Is it in our emotions? Where does this all live?
Mm. I like to talk about conflict as like electricity. And I have a shop at my house, and I love to do woodworking. And I remember when I built this shop, and I needed 220-volt electricity to run a particular table saw. Well, I didn't have it, so I hired an electrician to come out and run electricity to my shop because I'm scared to death of electricity. Every time I get close to it, I'm afraid I'm going to die. Well, I watched this electrician work, and the deftness with which he maneuvered this incredibly potentially harmful energy source was amazing. He was touching wires with his bare hands and wasn't getting shocked. And so I watched him and I realized it's all about how you work with the energy. If you know what to do with it, you can do amazing things. But me, not understanding the rules of electricity, if I got in there, I'd kill myself. And so it's like electricity, and I think it's stored all over. It gets stored in our body. If you've ever experienced the gap of conflict, you know the tension in your joints, the jaw clenching. Some people have a heart racing, or your palms are clammy, hairs up on the back of your neck, whatever. I think it also is in our psyche where we are preoccupied with what does this mean and what's really going on here, and am I to blame? Are they to blame? And then it's also in the energy between us. I'm a big believer in kind of this shared energy between people. And when there's drama, that energy is toxic, and it just infects the ether.
Yeah, it does. People, whether they admit it or not, we're internalizing all the time. You know, we are, I mean, right now I'm really big into yoga. That's my thing. That's my place to go and just sort of think. And really, because I think I'm always moving in so many quick directions, and life has become... it's become fast-paced, but it's also, I take those moments to really go super slow, and I'm, like, very aware of this. And I think just having a place that I can think things through, and if there is conflict, which it comes up for me all the time, and I think it does for a lot of people, like, I'm taking time now to just think through what that conflict is, why it's happening, and how to respond. Like, do you, like,
how are you
dealing with it in your life? You know, I know you've got woodworking. How are other people? I mean, when we talk about leadership failures and culture, which we do a lot here at Talent Culture, talk to us a little bit about the context of what kind of work you're doing and how you're helping people work through these issues, either on a personal basis or a group basis, because that's what we call culture, right? It's
oh,
a
absolutely.
Feeling, it's an emotion, it's a collective.
And I really like you sharing about yoga. And yoga is a practice that that has with it some of the principles that we teach in all kinds of different ways. And it's this principle of stopping long enough to listen and pay attention and be present instead of just giving into the same habits and the routines and the automaticity of our lives. The other thing about it is being clear about what we're going to hold on to and what we're going to let go of. I think that's so important. And yoga, like a lot of really good practices of meditation and presence and intentionality, is you get really clear about our choices. And we're choosing what to hold on to and what to let go of. And then I think the other thing that's really important is being clear about what we really want. And that's not about being selfish. It's about digging deeper and saying, you know, when I say to somebody, I really want you to stop yelling at me, that's not really what I want. What I want is to feel safe, to feel valued, to feel connected. And if I could really get down deep and talk about that, then we could work together to figure out how that's going to happen. And it may or may not, it may involve all kinds of different behaviors we never even thought of. And so when we're working with individuals or teams, we get into practices of intentionality, practices of presence, and then practices of recognizing that we are living out these rules of drama or not in our cultures all the time through our processes, our procedures, the way we write memos, the way we talk to each other, the way we hire. And so we get to looking at those macro processes that either reinforce these healthy rules of engagement for conflict or reinforce drama.
So are you doing a lot of travel these days? Because this sounds like exciting work that you're doing. Tell us just a little bit more about like a day in the life and what it's like to be, what it's like to be you in this career right now.
I'm really having a lot of fun because I'm doing a lot of speaking about my book, and it's just so much fun seeing people's eyes get excited and trying new things and then them connecting with me and saying, here's how it's changed my relationship or my life. Yeah, I travel quite a bit. Probably once a month I'm out of the state. A couple times a year I'm out of the country. We're bringing our model for conflict resolution into China this year, so we're going into Mandarin, and it's just so interesting to look at cultural differences and how the Mandarin, how the Chinese culture sees conflict and sees concepts like compassion and energy, and just really, really exciting.
And why China?
Because they desperately are asking for it. And we've been approached by companies in China, training companies, learning and development companies for several years now, saying we need better models for conflict because the stuff that's out there is either pithy and superficial, or it's too theoretical to do anything. It's not practical, or it's so prescriptive that it doesn't take individual differences into account. We need something practical, elegant, understandable that works. And so they're asking for it, and we're getting it from Germany, we're getting it from Austria, the Netherlands, Canada, South America, and even Australia and New Zealand.
Pretty much everywhere. Sounds like we have a global movement to handle conflict. Yeah, there you go. So
we want to change the energy balance in the world.
Well, let's start here. I think it's a great idea, and I think it's about time. Let's do it, and I think it's going to take a while, but, you know, you're off and running, so that's awesome. So I want to go back to the title of this podcast today, The Secret to Having Conflict Without Casualties, because it really, like, it stood out to me, right?
Yeah.
What are the secrets? Tell us. Like, what are those secrets to not leaving friendships, relationships, loved ones behind?
Couple secrets we've already revealed, and the first one is to defeat those myths and really challenge them and be aware of where we're believing those myths and start to counter those. That's the first one. Second one is to really understand the word compassion. Most people think compassion is caring, sympathy, my heart goes out to you, you know, I just want to help you. But really compassion, if you go to the Latin root, means to suffer with. Calm means alongside or with, and passion means to suffer or struggle. So compassion means to struggle with, which is the exact opposite of drama, which is to struggle against, except the word struggle is the same. So it's really about in life, are we going to struggle with people or are we going to struggle against them? Because it's going to be a struggle. And so that's the second one, is to recognize what compassion really is. The next secret is to reconcile accountability with compassion, because you can't, if you just have compassion without accountability, you get nowhere. You can't nicey-nice your way to ending an abusive relationship. But if you have accountability without compassion, then you're just alienating yourself because nobody likes a heavy-handed approach to every single problem. So it's about forcing those two to coexist. And the only way to do that is to embrace vulnerability. And we have to be vulnerable. We have to get transparent. We have to start revealing our motives and get real with people instead of seeking to be justified. And then only then can we fully start taking responsibility for our emotions and our behaviors and our part in this struggle.
Mm-hmm. And you talk a lot about compassionate accountability. Tell us just a little bit more about that.
Well, the word, the phrase has been thrown around for here and there very casually, but we took it very seriously and said, this is actually a methodology. It's a paradigm. It is a complete paradigm of these two things coexisting. And if they're going to coexist, we have to figure out how it works. And so we believe the only way to have conflict without casualties is to practice compassionate accountability. Because if you have one without the other, there's going to be casualties. And so that's where we've developed all of our methodologies and techniques and practices and research on how do you have these two things coexist all the time while we're trying to close the gap between what we want and what we're experiencing. And that's why my book is called Conflict Without Casualties, because it seems like that's not possible. And so we wanted to kind of say to the world, yes, it is. You can do it.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any case studies or examples of, you know, companies or leaders that you're working with that have been struggling with some of this?
Yeah. One of the ones I'm most proud of is Big Brothers Big Sisters of Kansas, an amazing organization with like 30 some sites all over the state. And they've gone from kind of just being an average organization within the U.S. to being one of the top leading edge best practices in the whole country. And they fully implemented this model into how they do conflict, how they do hiring, how they do HR, how they deal with performance problems, where they're truly saying it is consistent with our mission to serve children that we are both accountable and compassionate at all times at the same time. And so it's just fascinating to watch what they do.
That must be so cool for you to go, this is actually happening. Like, this is a culture that's making an effort to change. And I think that's so hard for so many people, so many leaders, so many cultures out there to really face the fact that times are changing, right? I mean, you and I were talking about that before the podcast. It's like, you may be in Kansas, I may be in Cambridge, Mass, but, you know, our friends, our loved ones, our world is global. And the way in which we're working and collaborating is changing dramatically. And will continue. It just will continue.
Oh.
So,
absolutely.
You know, to have that kind of power and say, yes, you can change, you know, and then have that unfold and be able to watch that maybe in the physical, right? Or on Skype or video. I mean, there's so many different ways in which brands are sharing their culture, you know, and no
culture
is the same and no one culture is perfect, you know? People are people.
But one thing we are seeing, Megan, is that the up and coming generations, they're getting very disillusioned with capitalism, not because they don't understand capitalism, but because they're seeing casualties of conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really
Absolutely.
Think that businesses have this huge opportunity to show the next generation that we can balance compassion and accountability and pursue business goals while making a positive difference in people's lives, and there don't have to be human or environmental casualties in the process, and regain our faith in the ability of capitalism to really build something amazing.
Well, listen, we're down to about 60 seconds. I want to thank you, Nate. This was a really interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to hanging out with you a bit more on Twitter. We'll definitely continue this conversation. And, you know, good luck in everything you're doing. It's very exciting.
Thank you, Megan. It's always a pleasure to talk about it. You can probably tell I'm pretty passionate, and I really get excited with the opportunity to share this message of hope for people around conflict.
Keep up the great work. Happy Valentine's
Thank
Day,
you.
Everyone. And happy
Thanks.
Conflict.